Hello, funky listeners, and welcome to another episode of Funk Radio. This is your host, Kyle.
And this is your host, Peter. Whenever you're talking, do I count as one of the funky listeners?
I suppose, vice versa. Since you're listening to me to know when to talk, because I shut up.
So when I'm talking, are you one of the funky listeners?
Yes. We're it's like Schrodinger's box. We're always in a state of listening and funking. But you don't know which is which.
All right. Well, I wasn't expecting that to be our intro today.
Deep philosophical constructs, yes.
That's why we all listen to Funk Radio, because you never know what you're going to get. Funk yes. Radio is like a box of chocolates.
So, for this episode, similar to a previous episode we did a couple back, we wanted to have one that tied in music sampling, because Peter... You actually stumbled upon the fact that this fairly obscure Afro beat song from the early 70s has been sampled in like a crapload of music, so we figured we'd use this as like the skeleton for our episode.
Indeed, and to remind you people who, I don't know if, how often you listen, but yeah, it was only, I don't know, maybe two or three episodes back.
Yeah.
We talked about a little... I would say almost, well, maybe not quite as obscure, hip-hop song from, like, way back before rap was even really a thing, called Lottie Dottie by...
Lottie Dottie.
Who was that by?
Slick Rick and something.
And something fresh.
And something fresh. DJ Quick Fresh? I don't know. I just remember Slick Rick.
We're really good at facts.
Yeah.
But, basically, the deal with that was that it was like a really obscure rap song that, you know, over the course of the last 30 years or so, lyrically has found its way into like dozens and dozens of songs. And so we found something kind of similar with Sol Mucosa this week. And so we thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. What's funny is with this song, we'll obviously play a clip, but this the song... is so far removed from anything that it's sampled in that it's almost funnier than our other episode, because the other episode at least was like an evolution of rap. This one is just, I don't even know. Probably everyone who ever sampled this was like, oh, that sounds cool. You know?
I mean, that makes sense. A lot of sampling does just happen because an artist likes a song and it seems to fit to some extent anyway.
True.
Right? I don't know. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Sol Mucosa, Kyle, and who it's by? Because I don't think we even have said that yet.
So yeah, Sol Mucosa, for those of you that don't know, which is pretty much everybody, is a song released in 1972 by Cameroon saxophonist and songwriter Manu Dibango. Dibango, right? Yeah. What's funny is that this song is actually considered by many one of the first official kind of disco records.
Which ties a little bit into last week, because yes, we were talking about like some of the first disco songs that came out. And I personally wouldn't really consider this
disco
to be disco as much as like Afro funk or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which, just an aside, like that's something like we really have not touched on at all in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Afrobeat, Afro funk type of music. I mean, I think that was fairly large actually in the 70s, but we just don't know much about it, so we haven't
because really gotten into it. Yeah, it's kind of outside the US a bit. What's funny, though, about this song and the way it kind of caught fire was it was purchased by this guy, David Mancuso, who is a person. Sorry.
Oh, I was actually reading a little bit about him.
Okay. What does he do?
I was reading about, and that he apparently was... He became pretty popular in the 70s in New York City for having basically private invite-only parties. So it's kind of a little bit different from the model of, say, nightclubs.
It's more like exclusive.
Yeah, it's exclusive, but in a slightly different way from, like, if you compare it to, like, Studio 54, for example, it was saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's exclusive in the sense that you can only attend by invite.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas something like Studio 54, like they would make you wait outside and they would purposely only let in a few people just to like make it more popular, because it would artificially create the sense that it was so popular that like no, like barely anybody could get in, so everybody wanted to get in.
It's funny, it actually says here that Studio 54's exclusivity was inspired by David Mancuso's kind of extra, like, overly, I guess, tight-knit little group of partygoers, and that by that Studio 54 realized by making something kind of off limits, it made it more popular because then people tried harder to get in.
Exactly. Yeah, that was what I was trying to say a minute ago, but I'm not always good at words.
The words and the putting them together.
So yeah, David Mancuso kind of did, I guess he was kind of one of the pioneers of that whole idea. And so they technically weren't public parties or anything like that. They were more private. Anyway, as you were trying to say before, Kyle, I think he was partly responsible for the popularity of the song because he found a copy of this in a record store and then he started playing it at these private parties that he had. And then, you know, people who went to these parties were like, oh, I've never heard this. This is a cool song. I'm going to go buy it. But since it was kind of obscure, there weren't very many copies to buy, so they disappeared pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I guess what sprung up from the, you know, I guess disappearance of this album and how horribly obscure the original artist was, that because of its rise to popularity very quickly, it says at least 23 different groups released cover versions of the song to capitalize on the demand for it.
Oh, okay. So
it's one of those things where, like, everyone knows the name of the song, but because the original artist was so obscure, other people released, oh, this is, I don't know, some other guy's version of Sol Mocosa, but everyone's just like, oh, Sol Mocosa, and they grab it.
Because they're like, well, some version of it is better than nothing.
Exactly.
Interesting. So,
that's pretty funny. It's almost like Chinese knockoffs.
Except they're American knockoffs of an African song.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we go any further, maybe we should play a small clip of this, just so, add a little bit of context to what we're talking about, maybe.
Yeah,
clip from Sol Mocosa, kind of the song that we're setting up right now in our discussion. It's going to kind of be the platform for everything else that we discuss and all the other songs that we talk about. But I hope you listeners got a little taste for what that sounds like.
I can take it. But yeah, that song, it's funny that not only was it covered a ton to capitalize on its success, it was also sampled by many different artists, you know, for decades to come because of its, like, intrinsic catchiness. Especially the little chorus with the, I can't even say it right, mama ko, mama sa, mako, makosa.
Yeah, I mean, in that,
do we know what that means?
Chanted, repeated chorus is basically kind of an adapted version of the title, Sol Mocosa. I don't actually know what Mocosa means, but let's look it up. Live on air, listeners.
Live on air, we do research that we should have done before the show.
Yeah, seriously.
No, I do that. I do that all the time.
It's a noted Cameroonian popular urban musical style.
Oh, so it's like Sol Mocosa is like a combination of that style and soul, I suppose?
It's strong electric bass rhythms and prominent brass. So it's basically
the song,
the Cameroonian version of soul funk.
I can dig it.
More or less.
I love Cameroons. I think I'm thinking of macaroons. Oops. Don't you love when you confuse a country with a dessert?
It happens all the time. I think probably the most well-known song that covers this, and probably the one that, if anyone does recognize the chorus of this song from anything, it's going to be from Michael Jackson's Wanna Be Starting Something.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
From the Thriller album. And it's not that prominent, I would say. I mean, it is there, and it's obviously you can hear the backing singers or whoever, you know, singing that chorus, but it's not till near the end of the song. It's not like a major part of the song.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was recognizable enough that, you know, people can hear it and they can say, okay, I know Sol Mocosa, it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they never heard it before and they hear Sol Mocosa later, they're like, hey, I know that from that Michael Jackson song.
And honestly, I think that's where I heard it from when you first mentioned it to me. I'm like, oh, isn't that a Michael Jackson song? But
exactly, yeah. And like I said, I think most people know it from this.
True.
More or less.
True. And it's very, yeah, it's very African. Now, I guess kind of going off that, did you ever notice that in the 80s, like, we were kind of obsessed with Africa?
I've noticed bits and pieces of that, yeah. Obviously.
In the music.
I was around at the time to know that.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, if you look back on pop culture, like, there was the music, like, there were so many artists using, like, African influence, even, shoot, what's his face? Who's the guy that did the soundtrack for Tarzan? Peter Gabriel?
I thought it was Phil Collins.
No, was it? I'm getting them mixed up.
So which one?
Because they were both part of Genesis. I think that's why I'm getting them mixed up.
So no, which one were you actually talking about?
I'm thinking of Peter Gabriel. Okay, sorry. No, I was getting the two mixed up. Peter Gabriel has a lot of African influences in his stuff.
Hmm.
Maybe Phil Collins does too, I don't know. Part of my argument was just remembering in the 80s we were obsessed with Africa because we had to save it from AIDS. You know, they had all those different charity events. U2.
Well, there was We Are the World, which was for Africa.
Exactly. U2 was very pro-Africa. You had the apartheid in the 80s. So I think a lot of that spilled over into music. I just unfortunately can't remember which music. Oh, yeah, and the band Toto.
Remember? Oh, yeah.
The planes down in Africa or whatever? That's like the most 80s song that ever existed.
That's true.
So there you go. Okay, my argument has been reformed. From Toto. But yeah, it's funny that in the 80s, like, there was a lot of that influence, and then there was the, you know, with Michael Jackson, this song, despite being released in the early 70s, helped also define the Africanization of music in the 80s.
Sol Mocosa being in the early 70s.
Exactly.
Just to clarify, listeners.
Yeah, Sol Mocosa came out in the 70s, but influenced the Africanization of music in the 80s. I guess is what
yeah.
I'm getting at. Sorry. But I guess getting back to the song itself.
Should we play a little?
Yes.
We've been talking about it for a few minutes.
We have. Let's do it.
Let our listeners hear the reference and want to be starting something by Michael Jackson.
Okay.
I actually do want to make a comment really quick.
Yes.
About the chorus. Something I noticed is that the way they say it between the original and this song is slightly different. And I've also noticed other songs that also reference this each kind of had their own slightly very different variation on it. Like the original Sol Mocosa, it goes, Mamako, Mamasa, Mako Makosa. Whereas in this one by Michael Jackson, they say, Mamase, Mamasa, Mamakosa.
Huh.
And I screwed that up. But if you listen to the two of them like back to back to each other, the way they say it, it's a little bit different. So I found that kind of interesting. I don't know if there's any real reason for that.
I don't know. Should we play them back to back so that listeners don't have to go through the trouble of?
No, they can go through the trouble.
Okay, so I don't have to.
Yeah.
I can take it. But yeah, no, I would imagine, especially if you don't know what the original context was, that over the years of sampling it, the mispronunciation would grow, you know.
Yeah, and you know, part of it, and honestly, like me having heard it in many different songs, I don't notice the difference because they sound almost identical. Mm-hmm. But if you like look at the way they're spelled too, it's a bit different. But it's not a big deal. It's just a small little detail I wanted to touch on. And I guess it's sort of similar to Lottie Dottie with the rap thing a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We noticed how over time, like the in different songs, the lyrics of that slightly changed each time. Whenever like multiple songs would reference the same bit.
That's true.
I don't know. Just a little thing. So again, Michael Jackson's song, I think, is easily the most popular reference to Soul Mucosa. And it was honestly was the only one that I was aware of before today.
Yeah.
When we were looking into it a little bit more. But we, you know, learning that there was a whole, you know, long list of other songs that did as well, I found that kind of impressive, especially for something as kind of obscure as the original song, you know.
I would probably venture to say the second most popular is, of all the songs we have listed here, is probably Will Smith's Getting Jiggy With It. Would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how popular they are in themselves, probably, yeah.
But in terms of, like, recognizability of the reference, maybe not.
Correct, yeah. Because I was actually, because I love the song, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
Getting Jiggy With It, just because it's really fun. But, wow, it's that was from 1998? I thought it was a lot earlier than that.
No,
I thought it was the 90s, but like early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I didn't realize it was that late. That's funny. What was I going to say? Oh, I was listening to it again because I didn't actually... Because it's a song that I like, but I never really realized that referenced Soul Mucosa. So I was actually listening to it not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's basically just one line in the rap that he kind of just throws in.
What's funny,
Mama Say Mama Sa or something.
Yeah, what's funny about that is I actually just watched the video, and that line is when he's in Egypt. He's like pretending to be like an Egyptian guy. So it's just that loose association of Africanism in Egypt. And I don't know if that was intentional or if that
everybody
was just
knows
like,
Egypt and Cameroon.
Exactly.
Over,
if it was just like, fuck it, I'm in Egypt now. This yeah. video is so weird and so 90s. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So, I mean, that's an example where, I mean, I guess I think it shows that there's a more of a variety of how songs can take that influence and incorporate it into themselves in their own ways. You know, whereas Michael Jackson takes the entire chorus and repeats it over and over,
mm-hmm.
In a way that's pretty prominent near the end of his song. This is just like a one-off, very quick line that I knew was in there, but I never really associated it with this song. And by the time you realize it's there, he's already gone on to talk about the Lakers or something else.
Love the Lakers. Well, they were good in the 90s, so. Now they suck. Sorry, Lakers fans.
Fun fact, listeners.
Fun fact, the Lakers suck. I'm really gonna get hate mail for that, watch.
There's so many other things that we would be getting hate mail for.
Touche. God, we should just make like a bloopers reel of just all the stupid shit we said throughout the episodes and just make like a
It's called Funk
episode.
Radio. This is the blooper reel. There is nothing else.
There is no re-edit. We do it live. What? You on the ball with your kid? Watch your step, you might fall trying to do what I did. Mama, mama, I'ma come close side in the middle of the club with the rubber dub. I guess a little aside about the song that I thought was kind of interesting too was separate from this whole Mama Koma Masa Manamana Manamana thing is that Will Smith actually said in an interview that his inspiration for the song was to alter the meaning of the term jiggy or jigaboo because obviously that was a derogatory term for African Americans.
Like an old timey term, right?
Yeah, I don't know
people
anyone
were using it by the 90s.
Pretty much if you use it, that probably means you're like 110 years old and racist. I don't know anyone that even uses that anymore, but he wanted to basically like take back that word, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So the literal meaning of the title is like getting African American with it or getting black with it or whatever. Because it's kind of supposed to reference the inherent rhythm that black people have. So, you know, by getting African American with it, you're adopting their sense of rhythm, their superior sense of rhythm, I suppose.
And dance.
But just the concept of kind of taking, co-opting that word and taking it back, he meant it to be kind of a bit racially empowering. Like, you know, we're not going to let that word define us. We're going to redefine it, which is cool. Good for him, I guess.
Yeah, I like that.
Will Smith is the Martin Luther King of the 90s.
I'm pretty sure that's the first time anyone's ever said that.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure even he would say no, no. Speaking of Will Smith, there's this... So I'm looking for a good ugly Christmas sweater for the holiday season. Mm-hmm. And there's one that I happened to stumble upon on Amazon that I'm really tempted to buy because it's basically Will Smith from Fresh Prince in a Santa hat emblazoned on the entire front of the shirt, and around him is just cassettes and like old 90s cell phones.
Oh my god.
And it's green, and I'm like, I really, really want to get this shirt and have it be my ugly Christmas sweater.
Sounds kind of amazing.
It's pretty great. Maybe I'll post a link on the, what do you call it, the Facebook page so your listeners can also purchase it for your own holiday pleasure.
Buy them all before Kyle does, and then he has to think of something else.
Oh, you dick.
No, it's okay. Not enough people listen to this for that to work. They have more than five in stock.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, oh, there's five left in stock. Like, the only five people that listen to Funk Radio buy it, and then I don't get it. It's like, fuck. So the next song I want to talk about is much less popular than either of the two songs we'd heard before, but nevertheless references Sol Mikosa, is the song You See Me by Childish Gambino. I think we've mentioned him on this show before, just because he's a rapper, and he's a current rapper, and I like him, but...
I think we've mentioned him in passing once or twice.
Yeah, never... I don't think we've ever actually featured any songs of his that I can remember. Which is great, because I love this song. Peter always refers to this song as the All Them Asian Girls song, because I believe that's one of the lyrics.
Well, it is, right?
Near the
beginning.
Yeah.
And Kyle used to, whenever we would, I think actually when we would drive from, when our little group would drive from our apartment in college to the campus so that we could do the original Funk Radio, you would always blast Childish Gambino, and it was usually this song.
Yeah, pretty much.
So this song kind of became notorious in our little group.
It became the rallying cry for funk. So for those of you that don't know, Childish Gambino is the rapper moniker of actor Donald Glover, who is from Community. He plays that guy. I never watched Community. I don't know any of the characters.
Neither did I. I've never seen it. Oh no, actually, I've seen one episode, and it was funny.
Yeah, I think I watched the episode where they had like a giant pillow fight.
Or the pillow fort.
And it was hilarious. Yeah. Oh, he plays Troy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like with Community, any given person has either seen the entire series and loves it, or they've never seen it.
Probably.
I've never heard of anyone in between.
It's just happened. You know, I watched it in passing. It's always either they like binged it or they never saw it one episode in their life, exactly.
So, Childish Gambino is the rapper name of this actor.
Yes. He's done other things. He was part of the Derek Comedy Group, which I think... Was that you or Ryan that started, like, really was into that for a while?
They were one of the few internet comedy groups from
the mid-2000s.
Yeah, that were pretty popular. I forgot he was part of them.
Yeah. And he's also a comedian. He has a couple of good stand-up bits. I know there's one he has on Netflix. I forget the name of it, but it's good. Anyway, so yeah, he came out with a rap album in like 2011 called Camp. Before that, he released, you know, his rap singles and stuff that he did for free on like SoundCloud or Bandcamp or whatever. This was the first album that he released that was actually like through a record label, so he made money off it. And this song, You See Me, is just one of his many songs on the album that talks about, you know, his penchant for Asian girls, I suppose. But
it's pretty obvious in most of his songs.
What's funny is that, like, regarding the album as a whole, a lot of it actually has to deal with kind of racial themes that aren't really talked about a lot, and like cultural ostracism and like different expectations of race, were like, oh, not only are there the expectations that white people put on the black community, sometimes there's expectations that the black community has for itself, good or bad, and if you don't fulfill those, you're not, quote, black enough or something.
I can see that.
And it talks about, you know, him growing up with that because he never, you know, was super heavy into the black, into the same things that other black kids were into. And because of that, he was kind of ostracized, you know, considered a nerd, a geek, whatever. And because...
But then he became a rapper.
Because, exactly. Because he didn't fulfill, like, certain negative stereotypes. And he talks about that, and I always thought that was really interesting. That was an interesting perspective to hear some... a black person talk about basically feeling like they're letting down their black community by not fulfilling the negative stereotypes of that community. It's kind of a messed up, it's kind of a messed up thing that like that even like is an argument that has to be made. But
yeah, that's interesting. He talks about it in his songs. You mean
in certain ways, talking about how, he's, you know, in school, he was bullied because he wasn't black enough, or he was bullied because he was, you know, geeky or socially awkward or whatever. And you know that didn't live up to the expectations of, you know, black kids in poor areas at the time. So, kind of interesting, but so yeah, a lot of the songs
he showed all of us.
Some of the songs in the album exactly deal with that, and then some of them are just about Asian girls, like this one. But he, in one of his rap lines, I think he basically just throws it in so he can rhyme something with it, but. He uses the line like "mama ko mama ka ma ka so ma" or something. So,
oh yeah, that's this is another example of a slightly different variation of it because he says "mama sa mama kusa."
Yeah.
Oh no, he says "I'ma say mama sa mama kusa." That's how he says it.
Instead of "mama say," it's "I'ma say shit."
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. So yeah, we can play a little clip that highlights that line, I suppose, but. I love this song because it's just so ostentatious and like, I love Asian girls, UCLA. I love that he just drops UCLA like, oh, that's like the mecca of Asian students.
Oh, it is.
It really is. So yeah, that's You See Me by Childish Gambino. He's got some good rap stuff. Check him out. I like him better than most rap. Yeah, at least current rap, I should say. Because he doesn't talk about stupid shit. And if he does, it's funny. Because he's making fun of stupid shit.
Has he only released that one album? Or...
No, he has
I thought he had more.
He has a second album called Because of the Internet. That has some good stuff on it, too.
Okay.
But, yeah. That also references internet culture and like how stupid it is and stuff. So, good stuff.
I'm going to... briefly talk about two different songs because we don't have much to say about them. I'm just gonna kind of bang them both out now. So I listened to Don't Stop the Music by Rihanna, which is apparently another one of the more well-known songs that samples Soul Mucosa. And when I was listening to it, it doesn't sample or whatever the original song, it actually samples the Michael Jackson cover of it. So that clip, that part of the chorus that's in the Michael Jackson song where they covered Soul Mucosa, Rihanna samples that rather than the actual original. So you get kind of a mix. Sometimes people sample the original, sometimes they cover it, sometimes they sample a cover. The other one I wanted to touch on quickly is... I didn't actually even see this one on the list, but you picked it up, Kyle. Was "Do It Good" by KC and the Sunshine Band. We actually talked about them extensively in our last episode.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically a really popular disco band from mid to late 70s in Florida. Pretty good stuff. Apparently, in one of their earliest songs from 73, "Do It Good," which I've never heard, I had to go listen to it. Apparently, that samples it, and I don't think actually I'm misspeaking a little bit because I don't think it's technically a sample. I think they're covering a piece of it of Soul Mucosa. But they basically cover the horn version of the refrain from Soul Mucosa because there's kind of like there's the spoken bit of it, but then there's also the musical half of it, and Do It Good samples the musical part of it in I guess a break that's like halfway through the song or so.
I thought it was interesting to put it in because the sample was only a year after the original song, so it highlights it highlights its popularity within the disco world that we kind of were talking about at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
So I can.
That's interesting. It. I didn't even think about the timeline there.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, that's cool.
For sure. I guess we're kind of on to our last sample, because all the other ones we found were kind of just like, either it wasn't super obvious, it doesn't fit into our realm of our genre, or they're just artists we never heard of.
Yeah, I do want to point out that the list of songs that either cover it or sample it or whatever, I mean, it's a good like 30 to 40 songs. So definitely we're not even touching, you know, we're only touching a small fraction of it. Mm-hmm. We're kind of just cherry picking the artists or the songs that we at least somewhat are familiar with. So I don't want to say that, you know, Soul Makossa, oh, it was featured in these five songs. Because, I mean, its reach is much longer than that. And, you know, consistently from 1973 until now, I mean, like every year there's been multiple songs that have referenced this. So I don't want to make it sound like it's has less of an influence than it does. I don't want to undersell it, I guess.
Just really quick, I want to jump back to the Rihanna thing only because I was reading here and there was apparently a lawsuit regarding that song.
Oh, I forgot I wanted to talk about that.
I can just glaze over really quick. Yeah, basically there was a lawsuit because her sample didn't sample Mamakosa, but as you said, sampled the Michael Jackson version of the song, Wanna Be Starting Something. So, in February of 2009, Dibango, the original song dude, filed a lawsuit against both Michael Jackson and Rihanna's, I guess, legal team, whatever, claiming that both songs stole their Mama Say, Mama Sa, Makasa Sa hook from his song, Soul Makossa, without permission. And according to a French magazine called Agence France-Presse, I totally butchered that, I'm sorry, Jackson admitted that he had borrowed the line and settled the case with Dibango out of court. However, when Rihanna had asked Jackson in 2007 for permission to sample it, he had approved it without telling or contacting Dibango. So,
basically, he didn't even have permission originally to use it, and then he's like, hey, can I do it?
Exactly, and then he gave her permission, which he didn't have any right to do because he didn't, you know, originally do it himself. So, I guess the original singer, Dibango, brought the case before the Parisian court, demanding 500,000 euros in damages that should have been paid to him and his record label, blah, blah.
Sounds like they settled it out of court.
Yeah, though. It sounds like they settled that amount out of court, but it's just funny that it became this big confusing web of like Jackson stole the song and didn't have permission for it, and then Rihanna wanted to sample Jackson's songs, you know, 30 years later, and then he's like, okay, this must have been right before he passed away too, because when did he die? 2009?
Yeah, I was thinking that too when I was reading it, because it must have not been too long before that, so it was only about 2 years before.
So just this whole web of like legal litigation, which we've talked in many different episodes about royalties and how all that crap works. It's very confusing. But I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting tie-in.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we've talked about lawsuits a number of times. And for you listeners who don't know how much 500,000 euros is, it's 532,425 US dollars.
Thank you, Peter, for doing the exchange rate.
They're pretty close. I don't even know why I said
that. Like, I was like, I didn't realize the exchange rate was so close. I thought their euros were worth more than the dollar. Maybe I'm wrong. No, wait, that would be worth more. But I thought it was worth a lot more.
They are worth more, but not by
a ton.
A whole lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. So yeah, there's a tie-in, I guess, between two songs we talked about. Jumping back to our last song that we want to talk about. Regarding sampling of Soul Makossa, it was sampled in the song Pump Your Fist by Kool Moe Dee in 1989. I don't think we talked about Kool Moe Dee. He's a pretty prolific and influential rapper in the late 70s through the early 90s. And he was actually one of the first rappers to ever win a Grammy Award, and was the first rapper to ever perform at the Grammys. So that's pretty big, because they didn't...
That's awesome.
They didn't even have, like, a rap... What do you call it? Like, category, probably until, like, maybe the late 80s. Mm-hmm. So, that was a big deal. It won't happen again. Pump your fist. Funny thing that I wanted to mention about Cuomo D, again, totally separate from our, you know, Soul Makossa bit, but just, it's funny nevertheless, is he apparently had a very long-running feud with New York rapper LL Cool J, who I don't think we ever talked about in this show, but he does stuff too. What's funny is that along with other rappers, Cuomo D claimed that LL had stolen their rap styles without giving proper, like, respect or notation to them as, like, you know, the, I guess, grandfathers, the grandmasters, you could say, of rap. Because LL Cool J was going around saying, oh, I'm rap's new grandmaster, but he didn't, like, really give any credit or dues to those that came before him, like, you know, Cuomo D, like Grandmaster Flash, Grandmaster Caz, all that stuff. So, because of this little feud they had going on, Cuomo D challenged LL on his album How You Like Me Now, which, by the way, was platinum selling. He challenged him on the single, which is also the same title as the album, How You Like Me Now. Kind of like just calling him out. Apparently, on the album cover as well, he kind of took a shot at Cool J by having a Jeep in the background that was running over one of L Cool J's signature Kangol hats. He always wore those kind of, you know, Kangol drivers, the one with the little kangaroo on the front. They're kind of a famous hat from the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
I think my dad had one. So, yeah, on the album cover, it shows a Jeep running over his hat, kind of just like as an FU to LL Cool J. So, I don't know, I thought that was kind of funny. That'd be a good, that would actually be a pretty interesting episode later on as rap feuds.
As you were talking about that, I was thinking that'd be funny to kind of pinpoint, like, rappers calling each other out.
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time, even just feuds in general. I'm sure it's happened before the days of rap.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting topic. We can save that one for later on.
Well, actually, but, a while back when I was reading from Hip Hop Family Tree, and if you listeners don't remember, that was the comic book, I guess, that was basically about like the early history of hip hop, and there was a ton of feuds and stuff, even their very early days. Because I mean, it kind of started just from like groups of people on the street. So obviously, there's going to be there was a lot of territorial stuff as well going on. I don't know how violent it was, honestly. I couldn't say, but it was they were pretty serious about it.
Speaking of, I guess, those feuds, which really, I watched this really interesting documentary that kind of ties into that about gangs in New York from the late 60s to mid 70s, which kind of set the stage for a lot of this rap stuff, like even Grandmaster Flash and stuff. It was this documentary called Rubble Kings about, in like, you know, in the Bronx and areas like that, just these different gangs that popped up that literally, like, there was like a gang on every block and they all hated each other and there was these feuds and wars. So everyone thinks, you know, gang problems, oh, that's, you know, gangs, those started in the 90s and, you know, the LA riots and all that. Gangs were around since the 60s and probably even before that in the 50s. It just wasn't black gangs. But by the 60s and 70s, you know, gangs were becoming more minority, you know, blacks, Hispanics, Puerto Ricans, stuff like that. But it was a really interesting documentary that ties that into the birth of rap music, actually.
That was probably because you were talking about the timeline of that. I mean, I'm sure that had to do a lot with, I don't remember the name of it, but like the whole post-war thing where everyone kind of started moving into like the suburbs.
White flight,
yeah.
That's, yeah, all the white people left the cities, moved to the suburbs after the Vietnam War. Same thing happened after World War II. It just happened again after the Vietnam War. And that's kind of what, I don't want to say ghetto-fied, but it kind of, you know, it created these minority enclaves in major cities like, you know, New York, like Florida, like Chicago.
That led to this stuff. I would say that was probably a contributing factor to it, at least.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, it's a good documentary, and it definitely ties in with the kind of the birth of rap music as like a way that these gangs kind of started to express themselves, and you know, towards the end when they were trying to find peace and stuff. It's kind of interesting. But yeah, it's called Robo Kings. I think it's on Netflix. I might be wrong. It was when I watched it. I don't know if it's still there. So
yeah, they seem to change things fairly often.
Yeah. So yeah, good stuff. I think that is actually our last artist as well.
Yeah, and like we said, I mean, there's plenty more. And, you know, even if they're artists that we don't necessarily really ever talk about or even have heard of, I guarantee that some of these other names might, you know, strike a chord with some of you other listeners. So I think it's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously resources online for you to find those things.
Yeah. Resources that are much more thoroughly researched than us.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Did I ever tell you how I thought of this idea, by the way?
No.
Oh, actually, the timing of it doesn't really make any sense now, but I originally heard about Soul Mucosa and the whole context of this in college. In college, I took two different music classes. And one of them, one of them was about music and film. And the other one was just, this is the one I'm referring to. I think it was just kind of like world cult music and world cultures or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was long enough ago where I don't really remember what we talked about, but one of like the, I don't know if it, I guess it was an assignment. It wasn't really a project. We, each of us in the class had to come up with a miniature presentation of a song that takes cultural influence from two different cultures and mixes them together.
Mm-hmm.
And one girl talked about, I think she talked about Wanna Be Starting Something by Michael Jackson, and talking about how he kind of mixed his own, like, you know, 80s pop style with this kind of more obscure, you know, Afro pop, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Influence from Soul Mucosa. And at the time I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. And, you know, I think actually at the time, then I went and later I looked up Soul Mucosa. I thought it was cool. So I think I bookmarked it or something, but I haven't really thought about it since then. That was probably a good 4 years ago.
Damn.
If not more.
That's funny.
But yeah, I don't know. Every so often I would see like in a listing of songs or something in Soul Mucosa, and I would think of that again, and then I would forget. But I think that kind of that discussion we had a few weeks ago with the rap song, kind of in the similar vein of this, I think it kind of jogged my memory of this, so I figured it was worth looking into.
And here we made an episode out of it 4 years later.
Thanks, girl. I don't know who you were, but you inspired punk radio.
Thanks, random classmate. Yeah, that you kind of sparked another episode idea. It's just different songs that create, I guess, or are inspired by two different cultural, I guess, precursors.
That's funny. I didn't even think of that as being an episode of this, but we could think about that. Yeah,
it could. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty.
Too bad I don't have like everybody's presentations from that class. We could just steal all their ideas.
There you go. I like that.
Oh gosh.
Funny. Speaking of which, I actually just another documentary. I totally forget the name of it right now, but it was on HBO, I think. Just a documentary I watched on the history of Latin music. It was actually pretty interesting too. Just talking about, you know, the rise of, you know, people like Carlos Santana in the 60s, the huge explosion of Latin music in the 90s with, like, you know, Ricky Martin, Marc Anthony, J-Lo, and all those people, and how big of an influence they've had in American culture since, you know, we're, like, I think they're the biggest minority now, actually. More interesting influence there.
I think Latin music's influence on funk and maybe soul, I don't really know as much, maybe more later.
Well, look at War. They're very Latin influenced.
Yeah, I think there's something there too that I know next to nothing about Latin music, so I think it'd be interesting
exactly.
Expand it's, into that as well.
They've had such an influence on like funk and soul, but other than War, I can't really pinpoint anything. It's kind of sad. So I don't know. More stuff to think about. More funk to feed on. So, so this has been, I guess, our episode on Soul Makosa. Peter, do you want to do our little outro? We just fade out to that, just you saying that over and over.
No, we're not going to do that. Because it's hard for me to say. Especially, even if I'm reading straight from it, it's hard for me to do it.
It's hard for me to say without sounding like I'm gargling marbles.
Exactly. Well, listeners, if you cared at all about anything we said today, tell us on Facebook at facebook.com/getyourfunk. Or you could comment on one of our tracks on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/getyourfunk. You can also click the follow button there if you have an account. And anytime that we have a new episode, it'll pop up into your little SoundCloud stream, then you can listen to us. Or if you'd rather follow us on, not follow, what's the word? Subscribe to us on iTunes. We're also on overmental.com, along with many other cool podcasts as well, about different things, not about obscure music.
we're on there with many other podcasts that are better than us.
I don't know. I think we're probably the best one.
Yeah, we're pretty good.
Yeah, we are. We're awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We should make shirts.
Okay, well. I don't know if anybody would buy them.
We should make candles that smell like funk.
That would smell terrible.
It just smells like BO.
Wasn't that like where like the word funk originally came from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be a terrible candle.
What does this candle smell like? It smells like old socks and ass sweat.
Bye, listeners. I'm not gonna say anything else.